from Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Philip Beverly, Stephanie Hitt, Jim Prescott, and Ricardo Rodriguez. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. And if you'd like to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo. And again, we have lots to talk about in the next 2 hours. And thank you very much for joining us on this 4th of July weekend, and hope that you are enjoying yourself. And many of you are on America's highways and byways coming back from your 4th of July celebration. So tonight, be careful on the road. But again, keep your dial set where it is on America's great radio stations that carry this broadcast. Tonight, we are going to talk, at least in the first hour, about one of the most explosive candidates to run for president in a long time. It's Donald Trump. We talked briefly last week on this program about his comments insulting Mexicans, referring to many of them as rapists and killers. And this obviously dominated a lot of news. Donald Trump, because of those comments, although a presidential candidate, lost a big deal with NBC and with Univision and also with the Macy's department store that no longer wanted to carry his fashionable ties and shirts. And so he has suffered economically because of those conditions. And some would say even the brashness of his personality has suffered, and he somewhat is a tainted brand. However, despite all of this problem that he's created for at least some Republicans and many Mexican-Americans in this country were very upset with those comments. There was an incident this past week where a 32-year-old woman in San Francisco was shot and killed by an illegal immigrant who had a long criminal rap sheet. There were 5 orders for him to be deported, and he fell through the system. He was released because the San Francisco Sheriff's Department did not want to enforce and follow a recommendation made by Immigration and Customs, ICE, the ICE Justice Department. And so we have a case, a very strong, highly visible case now that follows in the wake of what Donald Trump said. So we're going to talk about Donald Trump, the candidate, but we're also going to talk this evening about the bigger, broader issues and whether or not, inadvertently, by saying some pretty outrageous things, whether or not Donald Trump has propelled himself into being viewed as a serious player who's touching on a political nerve in this country. And I want to begin with Jim Prescott. Jim, you're one of our Republicans tonight. You formerly were in the press office of long-serving Illinois Governor Jim Thompson. What does Donald Trump's comments mean for the Republican Party?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. One is, I was thinking as you were talking about that, and I've had the thought in some of his the coverage of it this week, he's going to say something outrageous again. That's what drives his personality. That's part of his brand. And it's just going to be a matter of time before he says something else that offends someone else. It would be easy to dismiss him as, the clown, as someone who's doing this as a stunt. But clearly he's not. He certainly got, he says, enough money to make it make a serious run. And I guess he'll be in the first Republican candidate debate. It's a huge field.
Our other Republican is Stephanie Hitt. Stephanie, speak to the issue of what he said a couple of weeks ago when shortly after his announcement and the murder in San Francisco. What does that do to the issue that he talked about? Because he basically said it sort of proved what he was talking about, because most of the people, when they heard the words about Mexicans, it was the words rapists and killers that stuck out. And we're now dealing with an illegal immigrant who was a killer.
Well,
or alleged killer.
Right. And, Donald Trump is a lightning rod, and he has hit a nerve on this one. There is a very real issue that many people, especially those in border states, including California, where there is a real concern about the border security or the immigration. However, what I find really sort of disturbing about this is that what Donald Trump says is now becoming the basis for questioning all other Republican candidates. And that's where I find the media is trying in a way to take Donald Trump and try to paint some sort of picture of the rest of the Republican Party, which I think is somewhat unfair because Donald Trump is Donald Trump. He doesn't speak for all Republicans. But one thing he does do, though, is he does hit some nerves.
Philip Beverly is one of our Democrats tonight. Philip, look at it from across the aisle. And again, speak to the issue of whether or not the murder and the circumstances of the murder in San Francisco, whether that incident, which will be it already is highly publicized, whether that incident gives greater credence to what many people thought were outrageous comments by Donald Trump.
I think it only gives greater credence to those who the comments resonated with in the first place. And to be quite honest, I think you need a Donald Trump to speak to even fringe elements in any kind of discourse, because if you try and drive them underground, they'll just find some other way to pop up and rear their ugly head, and that's not good either. I mean, so have the full range of the discourse. You may not agree with it, but let his argument stand on its merits. And if it falls down, it falls down, and people go, meh, and they brush him aside.
Ricardo Rodriguez also joins us. He's an independent and a businessman. Speak to the issue of what Donald Trump said originally and, again, in juxtaposition now with a real-life murder of a 32-year-old woman in San Francisco.
Well, I think you have to look at the fact that there's obviously a system that's broken between the city of San Francisco and ICE. You have an individual that has five deportations, seven felony convictions,
right,
and whom the city of San Francisco didn't deem to contact or to follow the orders that ISIS had indicated. I think when one looks at the record of this individual, that should warrant some red light to come off to say that person shouldn't be in the U.S.
But again, I think you're right. The bigger, broader issue here is sanctuary cities, of which Chicago is one, San Francisco, a lot of major U.S. cities are, New York is another one. It brings into question the seriousness of that policy, which has been around for a long time. I mean, Harold Washington, when he was the African-American mayor of Chicago, introduced that over 30 years ago.
Well, I think the original intention was to support families and not have to have a family member be taken away from the family. And I think that has now been expanded to the point that it includes individuals that might not fit that particular kind of definition.
I want to continue on this discussion. I'm very interested in hearing from the audience. 1-800-723-8289 or tweet me a comment at Dumo or Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. I want to know where you come down. Donald Trump, how serious do you take him as a candidate? And even more importantly, does the tragic murder in San Francisco make his comments resonate with voters? Back shortly from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8289. Jeb Bush took a crack at Donald Trump, basically saying that he didn't believe that his comments were really reflective of the Republican Party. And again, Donald Trump has been very aggressive in sort of slapping a lot of the candidates around, but he spent a lot of his time really kind of roughing up Jeb Bush since he entered into the race. And just a couple of observations that I want to make. First of all, this past week, when everyone was talking about the reaction to Donald Trump and the impact, I said, I think last week on this program, I think we all agreed that Donald Trump was likely to be in the Republican debates. He could hijack these debates. He could control these debates. And this was even before the unfortunate death of the 32-year-old woman in San Francisco. This brought this issue back to the fore for maybe even a larger number of Americans. But my good friend Bruce Dold, who runs the editorial page of the Chicago Tribune, he and I are Facebook friends. And on his Facebook account, he played the interview that Donald Trump did with the Tribune editorial board, the complete. It runs about 45 minutes, maybe a little bit longer. And I watched every single second of it. It was after his controversial remarks about Mexicans. And also, he then, during that interview and explaining himself, chapter and verse, he gave other examples of what he meant when there were acts of violence committed by illegal immigrants. And he then went on to answer a variety of other questions. And I would say that in watching the totality of that Tribune editorial board meeting with Donald Trump, I was somewhat impressed, not only with his knowledge of all issues, but it was a different perspective of Donald Trump. So if you have access to the Tribune editorial board extensive interview with Donald Trump, you may want to put it in context. If you easily dismissed Donald Trump, and I'm not trying to pump for Trump right here, but I do want to, one of my goals on this program is always to put some things in context. And in this particular case, take a look at that, because I think it speaks to the broader issue that we're discussing this evening, is whether or not Donald Trump, with his outrageous statements, has touched a nerve. And if you touch a nerve in American political society, you sometimes get a lot of people to follow you, because I think Bernie Sanders has touched a nerve. And so sometimes when you say the things that appear to be somewhat outrageous, there is a following out there. And I want to just put that in context. Now, the other thing I will say is that this morning, Rick Perry was on with George Stephanopoulos. Rick Perry is one of a dozen people who is running for president. He was the longest-serving governor in the history of Texas. He hasn't really found his niche. A lot of people have easily dismissed him because of his embarrassment, 4 years ago, and his forgetfulness in a debate. But he's tried to change his act. And George Stephanopoulos specifically asked him about Donald Trump and Donald Trump's controversial remarks. And this is what Rick Perry had to say today.
The fact is, I've said very clearly that Donald Trump does not represent the Republican Party. I was offended by his remarks. Listen, Hispanics in America and Hispanics in Texas, from the Alamo to Afghanistan, have been extraordinary people, citizens of our country and of our state. They have served nobly. And to paint with that broad a brush that Donald Trump did is, I mean, he's going to have to defend those remarks. I never will. And I will stand up and say that those are offensive, which they were.
Stephanie Hitt, your response to the governor of Texas.
I think he's right. I think when that Rick Perry hits it right on the head, and that is his statements were such a broad brush. And it really, I mean, he basically said everyone is either a rapist or a killer. I mean, he did not step back, and he did not clarify it with
well,
any.
He didn't say everyone was.
But it was a pretty large group.
It was part of a laundry list.
Right.
He says, and there may be some good people in there as well.
Right.
But Phil Beverly, I want to go back to you. Rick Perry's comments are the complete opposite of Ted Cruz, the senator from Texas, who basically said he was saying, oh, that's Donald Trump, and he and I, you know, agree on a lot of issues. So just within the state of Texas, I mean, you have a senator, an incumbent senator, a former governor with a very impressive record that a lot of people would say throughout the country. Does Rick Perry get some credit? Because he's gone further in denouncing Donald Trump than any of the other candidates.
I think he has to get some credit for being a bit more reasonable. But I think Trump is playing a pretty calculated game of electoral calculus here. You've got a large number of candidates. It's going a small universe of primary voters. And so you don't need that many. And so if you cut off that particular slice, you could really solidify your base in a primary context. And with Trump, the other thing, he may be playing the longer game to do a Ross Perot at the general election.
Well, and also I think, you know, you mentioned Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz didn't necessarily endorse the things that Donald Trump was saying, but we're sort of trying
pretty close to it, though.
About he did say, you know, he's a friend of mine. However, he also is being very political, Ted Cruz is, and that is he's courting the same niche in many ways within the Republican Party that Donald Trump is. And when we've got 14, 16 candidates, the talk, when we're talking about the Republican primaries now, we're going to hear that word over and over, niche, niche, niche.
Jim, I want to get your reaction to Rick Perry's comments, and then I want to ask a follow-up to you.
I think if anyone, with the exception of Jeb Bush, can talk about the reaction to Donald Trump's comments, it's probably Rick Perry, given the growth of the Hispanic population in his state. And I think it's interesting, you may want to also consider the reaction from a demographic standpoint as well. In urban population areas that are predominantly Democratic, it's getting a typical kind of reaction. I will say from personal experience, because I've traveled through the breadbasket of the country and fly over states quite a bit for work, several years ago, I heard comments that Donald Trump would endorse today about Hispanics and illegal immigrants and issues like that in the Midwestern states, where especially in places like East Texas, where Ted Cruz has got a huge following. I mean, East Texas politically is where he came from, and made him the Tea Party there, put him over the top and put him in the Senate.
Yeah. Well, one of the other things is that because this field is so broad, Ricardo, I want to get your reaction. Because it is so broad, and it's almost like there's three or four wings of the Republican Party. One is sort of the business. The other is the social economic. The other is the libertarian version. And it may very well be that with the comments of Rick Perry today, maybe he moves into the establishment wing, because he is standing up and saying what a lot of establishment people is. He's come the closest to really slapping Donald Trump down. I mean, that's a stronger statement than any other Republican has made.
Right. Well,
and so I'm wondering not that it was political calculus, but it seems to me that, in fact, we had a guest on the show from California. This goes back almost 7 or 8 months ago when we were doing the show from California. And she was laying out this major case about all the Republican candidates. And she said that she thought that Rick Perry had the ability to take a little bit from the establishment, a little bit from the economic, a little bit from the social conservative. And he was probably in a better position to put together a successful stew, if you will, and get his way back into a serious candidacy, because he's not viewed as a tier one candidate right now.
Right. I think what you have to look at it for Rick Perry and for the Republicans to win an election, they need to open up their tent, and they need to have at least the outreach of saying that the Republican Party is more than what it is today and appealed to a wider constituency. And if one looks back to 1980 and 1984, when Ronald Reagan went, he went right after the Reagan Republicans, and he struck a chord there to bring them over to vote for him. So what the Republican candidates need to do, whether in the primary level or the general election level, is to build up that tent to get Democrats who might vote for a Democratic candidate to go over towards a Republican candidate.
Yeah, but a lot of those Democrats
are going back.
Are going back the other
right.
way.
Gallup's got a poll out this morning that more people are identifying themselves as Democrats these days. So the winds are behind the Democratic Party right now, right. And you're seeing that in some of the
and more even independents. Well, independents
sure.
are on
the then it seems like it would be appropriate to strongly renounce Trump. And really marginalize them, yeah. if nothing else, to save your party.
You know what it goes back to, Philip, in some ways, is that basic tenet in politics. Doesn't matter what political persuasion you are. It's about addition, not subtraction. Now, you know, to your point, he may be calculating that by going after a very small exception to what's happening in society today, that is addition for him because it'll bring people to his
side. But also when you say outrageous things, and by the way, I want to say outrageous things that touch a nerve because a lot of people believe a portion of the outrageousness of the statements. I mean, there are people,
yeah, absolutely,
not just Republicans, who believe that there are some illegal immigrants in this country, primarily from Mexico, and in that broad group, because the media tends to paint that group as people coming here for economic aspirations, and they're warm, fuzzy stories of people coming here for good reasons. There's a lot. I think that's the predominant image that's projected to the American people by America's media. But what the media doesn't talk about is sort of what Donald Trump said, is there's a lot of people believe that in that broad group of people coming to this country, there are murders, there are rapists, and we now have a case in San Francisco that demonstrates that's a fact. Back shortly.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Back in Chicago, thank you very much for joining us on this 4th of July weekend, and we're now going to let our guests introduce themselves, and we begin with Philip Beverly.
Thanks, Bruce. I'm an associate professor of political science at Chicago State University and probably the resident enfant terrible of my university, if you were to ask our administration.
Stephanie Hitt.
I'm Stephanie Hitt from Evanston, and I am a political activist for the Republican Party organization up there, and I am a reformed attorney as well.
Ricardo Rodriguez making your first appearance on our broadcast. Step up to the microphone and tell everybody a little bit about your background.
Thanks, Bruce. My name's Ricardo Rodriguez. I'm a businessman in the Chicagoland area. I'm also a fellow of Leadership Peter Chicago. I'm originally from New York City. I've supported candidates in the past, which are Democratic and Republican. I'm really concerned about the city, and I'm involved with a lot of different activities in the city.
And you grew up in the projects of New York.
Oh, I grew up in...
And you ended up at Harvard.
Right.
A Harvard graduate.
Oh, yes. I have an MBA from Harvard Business School. I grew up in the South Bronx, attended Brooklyn Tech, undergraduate from Fordham.
That's an important part of your background, sir.
Absolutely.
Jim Prescott.
I'm Jim Prescott. I had the good fortune of working for Jim Thompson, who had a habit of winning elections every 4 years. I was in his press office. I was his Chicago press secretary. I have my own public affairs consulting firm, work with a variety of different clients, some in the Hispanic community as well, and others primarily in energy.
And for those listening around the country, Jim Thompson was a moderate Republican, and he was elected 4 times, and he was the longest-serving governor in the history of the state of Illinois. Two political commentators who normally don't agree on anything said something very interesting today, which is what I've been thinking about for the last couple of days. And one was George Will today when he was on Fox, and Van Jones, who was on CNN. Hmm. And both of them, George Will used the word when they were talking about Donald Trump. If there were a mole from the Clinton campaign, could that mole be doing any more damage to the Republican Party? I'm paraphrasing now, George. But Van Jones basically said sort of the same thing. It crossed my mind because in this Tribune interview, he acknowledged that Bill and Hillary were friends of his. They were at his wedding. He has contributed to her. He has contributed to the Clinton Foundation. They're from New York. You don't become the powerful person in New York or a senior senator from New York or a junior senator from New York without perhaps at some point kissing the ring or asking for a donation from Donald Trump. And I'm just wondering, most of his fire seems to be towards Republicans and Bush and basically stirring up the Republican Party on an issue that they have been spending a lot of money and a lot of time trying to address, which is reaching out and trying to communicate to the Hispanic community that not all Republicans think ill of them. So I'm going to spend a couple of minutes just talking about, is Donald Trump a plant? Is he a mole?
I think he's Donald Trump. I think he's just Donald Trump. And, I mean, has there ever been a time when Donald Trump hasn't been a troublemaker or put himself out there? I mean, he likes to say outrageous things. He's an incredibly confident man. We'll leave it at that. I mean, that he loves superlatives. And I think that's Donald Trump. I think he feels because he's a businessman that the Republican Party is where he would most represent those business interests. But I really, truly believe at the end of the day, he's not going to be that serious a candidate.
And he's not a bull. Philip Beverly, what's the short answer to my question?
I think his narcissism is just too great for him to have been co-opted into being a mole. If he were, kudos to the handler who put the idea in his ear.
Jim Prescott.
I can't imagine that Donald Trump is letting himself be controlled by someone else. His ego is just too gigantic to make that happen. And, I'll take him at his word. He's serious about it. But, I come back to beyond the firestorm he created with his comments. Can you really picture Donald Trump in the Oval Office making decisions about any other issue except the ones that have been dominating his attention?
With Iran or
I can't.
Well, that's what he wants to talk about. That he would be the chief negotiator. Ricardo, what about this? Again, I'm paraphrasing, sure. But again, it was George Will, it was Van Jones, and I was thinking about earlier in the day. Because and just to answer George's question, can you think of anyone else who could do more damage in disrupting the party at the moment?
I wouldn't say that he's a mole. But you have to look at him as a business person, and you have to remember that he was the one who signed Herschel Walker and who made a name for the American Football League that actually fought the NFL. So he's always done outrageous things, and sometimes he's won. He signed Herschel Walker that played for them before he went to play for Dallas.
I'm totally lost on that.
Well, Herschel Walker was the
University of Georgia.
Well, and he was Heisman Trophy winner, number one team.
Yeah.
And then he signs with the New Jersey Jets Generals. Yeah. And then he reneges, but he's already signed. And he sets out, if you look at his record, his most outstanding years to rush were those five, six years.
Bringing it back to politics and Trump now. How should the other candidates be responding to him, Jim?
I think that's probably what they're trying to figure out beyond the issue, about his comments regarding Mexicans. that is really going to be fascinating, I think, in the days and weeks to come. And once they get on a debate platform, that's going to be even more interesting.
Now, we also have not talked yet about, and I'm going to give you a chance to talk about, we haven't talked about Chris Christie. Chris Christie got in the race, and at the beginning of the race, everyone thought that he was going to be the tough-talking guy from the Northeast.
Right.
And he has taken a couple of shots at Donald Trump as well, not as strong as Rick Perry. But where does he fit into this mix of fast talkers, big egos?
Chris Christie, it's interesting. If you start matching different candidates up, you know, you've got your governor's group, you've got your moderates, you've got your social conservatives like your Ted Cruz's, and, you know, there are all these groups. But what I think is interesting is that Trump is interesting because he's saying outrageous things, and he's outspoken, and he's calling. I think, first of all, to answer the question of how do we handle Trump, I think Rick Perry actually did it pretty well, and Jeb Bush was doing similar things. I think we're going to see more and more of, we're serious candidates, that's Trump over there. We're going to start to see some governors with real track records in there, really talking issue, and some point, the goal of the Republican Party is going to have to be get rid of these outrageous sound bites, and let's make the sound bites about success, achievements, and
issues.
Well,
that's why when I heard Rick Perry give the answer that he gave today.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, there's some serious questions about whether or not Chris Christie has been a good governor.
Right.
Certainly, if you compare him with the other governors that are running, he would be the fourth best governor.
Yeah.
And those are current governors.
Or fifth, even.
He wouldn't be. I mean, New Jersey is sort of, you know, going in the opposite direction under his leadership. Scott Walker has got his own problems in dealing with some even Republicans up in Wisconsin. Bobby Jindal also doesn't have a spectacular record as governor in Louisiana when you compare them. But now you're and Jeb Bush was governor what 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, again, I'm not cheerleading for Rick Perry, but I'm putting things in context. Texas is one of the remarkable economic stories in the last 25 years in this country, and he is the longest-serving governor.
Right.
And he also has come out today, the first one, the strongest one, to come out and denounce Donald Trump in a stronger way, and certainly an olive branch to Hispanic voters. And Republicans, when you're running in Texas, one of the reasons why that Texas is so Republican is because there's a lot of Republican who are Mexicans in Texas.
Well, I think he's
setting, how to deal with them.
I think he's setting the stage for
and he cracked down on illegal immigration at the border when he called in the National Guard. He actually did something because he didn't think the president of the United States was going far enough.
Well, if you look at Rick's run now versus 4 years ago, he's looking to be a more serious candidate. And he's positioned himself right in the middle.
Yeah.
The interesting piece that you haven't chatted about is that this weekend, Bush and the senator from Florida are spending the weekend, and Rubio is spending the weekend with Romney, staying at his house, and probably strategizing on how they're going to get a hold of his Rolodex and figure out how they're going to get that.
Rubio has been very soft on responding to the Donald Trump comments.
If not silent.
He's been very silent. It seems like what would help their party is a non-candidate sort of elder statesman to bring some focus to the party to say
– Well, Romney –
The last thing you know about Mitt Romney is he lost. You need somebody who's a winner, who's got the championship ring, as it were, who can speak from the place of having won something, who knows what it takes.
Well,
I know there's a sports metaphor there.
The last thing I remember is he brought all of his wealthy friends together and he turned it into a dog and pony show for other Republicans to get money.
Mm-hmm. And he backed down in the second debate. Let's start. Where did that downturn? He actually was up in the polls. He was tough, and then all of a sudden he just caved. And I think that's one thing that's really Republicans, conservatives, you know, people who didn't come out to vote for Romney last time, what they're looking for, and this is why Trump is interesting, but Christie could be more interesting, and that is they want hard talkers. They want people that are going to come out and say what needs to be said.
Yeah,
they do
want
that because they're
record.
Tired of what's been going on for the last 6 years in the White House, and they want someone who's going to come out
or the last
and tell
14
the truth,
years
you know.
In the White House.
Anyway, back Charlie from Chicago, 1-800-723-8289, or add Dumo if you want to tweet me a comment.
Come on down to the Museum of Broadcast Communications from July 7th through 11th and join us in celebrating one of the most recognizable icons of all time, Ronald McDonald. Show up on Tuesday the 7th and meet Ronald McDonald in person. Also, we'll be giving away free Ronald McDonald socks to visitors while they last. All at the MBC, 360 North State Street in Chicago.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. And we're going to we've sort of beaten the Donald Trump horse enough tonight.
Let's move on.
We're
going
to talk about a couple of let's talk about this other party, and let's talk about what's going on in the other party. Does Hillary, does she have this locked up, or does Bernie Sanders, in your view, Phil Beverly, does he have a chance to knock her off?
He doesn't have a chance to knock her off, but he's going to push her out of the center-right position that she's most comfortable in, mm-hmm. and force her to deal with a segment of our party that has been screaming about certain issues to the Obama White House and not getting anything heard.
And what
on.
About others? There's been talk now that Joe Biden may get in, and obviously
Biden,
Jim
and
Webb.
And Jim Webb, who is a very, very fascinating candidate out of Virginia. Senator Webb, and who has a military background, was Secretary of the Navy.
Under who?
Under Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
Huh. So, and yeah, he's one of those, used to be, now is on the other side. But it's interesting because
who is going to vote for him in a Democratic primary? In the Democratic electorate.
I see some hands here.
But
well,
Philip Beverly's hand went up. But
there are a lot of people who have we talk about those Republicans and Democrats that sort of shift back and forth. Maybe they were one time Reagan, what they call Reagan Democrats. There were, you know, Republicans who went and voted for Bill Clinton. They're those people who don't necessarily identify themselves as the extremes of either party. But where he presents a sort of sensible, more moderate, more reasoned kind of candidate. Hillary is still a polarizing candidate. And the latest poll I saw was Bernie Sanders was within 10 points. 10 points is not that much.
Ricardo, what do you think of the Democratic field? Is Hillary inevitable?
I would say, based on her track record of 2008, no. And I think people overestimate her ability and underestimate other candidates. She underestimated Barack Obama in 2008. Mm-hmm. And
she was inevitable then, too.
Yeah,
correct.
And I'll tell you this as an anecdote. I was in the airport in Washington, D.C. a week or so ago, and in the gift shop, they had all the presidential bobbleheads, and included among the presidential, including George Washington, was a bobblehead of Hillary. And next to all the White House T-shirts, they had all of these pink T-shirts that said, Madam President. And if you looked into the gift shop, you would basically say she is all but actually anointed. It was unbelievable the rise that she has. The media support that's out there for her, and I still don't think she's.
How do we get a meaningful debate amongst the Republicans, Jim? There's not been much talk about a Democratic debate, rather.
I was going to say, I had the thought as I have sort of a wry grin on my face because you're talking about Van Jones and George Will talking about
a mole.
What if Bernie Sanders is the mole on the other side trying to bring Hillary out? Nobody's mentioned that. I'm not trying to start anything, but let me just say.
The debate that I want to see is between Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. That's the debate I would like to see.
I would almost pay to see that.
That's
pay-per-view.
That would be fun.
In a ring.
I'm serious. I mean,
you may have something there.
You talk about two men who see the world completely different.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the debate that I want to see.
Yeah.
I think that the part of the party that's really clamoring beyond Sanders is the folks that are out for Elizabeth Warren,
mm-hmm.
and waiting for her to step in,
because if you have Elizabeth Warren versus Hillary, those numbers are going to change a little bit. It's a younger version.
Isn't it?
It's
kind of tough for her to do it right now. First of all, she's older than Hillary, right? Isn't she older than Hillary?
I think she's older than Hillary.
Yeah. I think she's probably concluded she can do more and have more impact from where she is. Right now.
But again, you know what happened is when Eugene McCarthy went out there and was doing very, very well, and in some cases, you know, he forced the President of the United States to step aside. But that encouraged Bobby Kennedy, who frankly didn't have the gonads.
He got in late.
He let Gene McCarthy go out there and prove that there was a constituency out there. And I'm wondering, you know, there's been talk today about Joe Biden. Again, according to the published reports today, is that, you know, Senator or Vice President Biden's son, his late beau, said he should run. He urged his father to run. Right. The other son also said he should run. I mean, what does he have to lose at the moment? Right. And supposedly he seems a little upset, as I think I would as well, is that he has been so dismissed, given a long record of public service, even though, you know, a lot of Republicans don't think much of it. But right. he has a very strong story. But where would his constituency come from, Phil?
Joe Biden's constituency?
Where would it come from?
I don't know that he has a constituency necessarily. I mean, having been a senator, his strength was obviously in foreign policy. His foreign policy background is pretty substantial in the Senate. He's been in the second worst job in the country, being vice president for 8 years. I mean, that's just
well, and he's
in, the first,
and, yeah. and he's interestingly not been tied to some. One of the things that Hillary has to worry about is where she needs to extract herself or put herself next to Barack Obama and his policies, failed or success. And the State Department, Benghazi, there's a lot of issues. Biden doesn't have, for some reason, even though he's been the vice president, the same sort of baggage.
Nothing.
And he's sort of clean, which is very interesting.
Well, he would have to run as the unadulterated third term of Barack Obama.
Exactly.
Everyone else can pick off where the president's been good or bad, but again, he's inheriting that. But again, it's, you know, when you're dealing with politicians and ego, I mean, everybody in Washington wants to hear them play Hail to the Chief, and Joe Biden has heard that in his brain since he was mid-30s. 1-800-723-8229 from coast to coast and border to border. When we come back, we will be taking telephone calls, and now we're at number two. We're going to talk more about the Democrats, more about the Republicans, and more about opening Cuba and whether or not that's a good idea or bad idea. The president thinks it's a great idea. I'm Bruce Dumont from coast to coast and border to border. This is Beyond the Beltway. Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all from the fire panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public service professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Philip Beverly, Stephanie Hitt, Jim Prescott, and Ricardo Rodriguez. Our program tonight, company of our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. And if you want to tweet me a comment, it is at Dumo. And, of course, you can go to our website, beyondthebeltway.com, and we carry the show live, audio and video stream. From our last hour, we do have a tweet that's come in here, or an email. This is from Richard Spirico, and he writes, "The more Mr. Trump is criticized by the experts, the more popular he becomes with average Americans who are painfully aware of illegal immigration and trade policies that have thrown Americans out of jobs. So keep criticizing Mr. Trump, please."
Well, you know, it's something we were touching on a little bit earlier, and that is, at some point, the really viable candidates are those that somehow relate on a personal, real human level with voters.
Or touch a nerve.
And touch a nerve. And, you know, it comes down to likability, believability. At the end of the day, people's track records, experiences, all of that. We elected someone who didn't have any much of experience. I think at the end of the day, it's really going to come down to, is this someone who's going to work for me and I trust and believe? I think there's a human element that sometimes we miss when we're analyzing. I think he's touching on that.
In a policy way and looking at sort of primaries, you look at Patrick Buchanan in 1992. Yeah. He's challenging the incumbent president of the United States. He got 33% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
You can get 33% of the vote, and that was in a two-person field.
Right.
So Donald Trump doesn't need 33% of the vote.
Right.
I mean, to literally start winning the Iowa caucus and the New Hampshire primary and the South Carolina. You know, because now one by one, those numbers will go down because candidates will fall by the wayside.
Right.
But again, likewise with Bernie Sanders. I mean, Bernie Sanders, the poll that I saw today, he was at 33%. Hillary was at 52%. I frankly don't recall whether it was in Iowa or New Hampshire, but that was the split. So with 33% of the vote, and then what happens is you get damaged. You get damaged in a primary because all the things that Republicans have said about you in the primary, which was George Bush's case, because the damage that was done by George Bush was done by Patrick Buchanan, and then along came Ross Perot, and he roughed him up again. And what happens? Bill Clinton becomes the president of the United States.
Well, and we saw that with Romney as well. He was damaged by a rigorous primary as well. But I think that it is definitely true. There are people out there that do not like this idea that there's an establishment out there, that there's an elite class. And
it's
so
right.
if somebody is being attacked by it, it makes them more relatable.
But
to
also,
the average
I guess
person.
The question I would say is that if it represents 33% in a Republican field, and that's basically what it has been historically, or 33%, you know, in the Democratic field, which we're seeing with Bernie Sanders right now. I don't know whether Gene McCarthy and I don't think Gene McCarthy ever got to 33%. He forced the president of the United States not to run again. That's pretty impressive. But 33%, if you're saying things that 33% of the Republicans agree with and 33% of the Democrats, and some of those things overlap, like trade policies, the fact that jobs are going elsewhere, maybe to agree that the fanning a flame that people from Mexico are stealing our jobs, you get that going out there, then does it call for an independent candidacy? In a three-way race, 33% could get you over the top.
Get you Ross Perot?
Well, Ross Perot had 20% in 92, but got no electoral college votes.
Right.
So,
but he also wasn't around for the end. He dropped out.
Right.
Had he not dropped out.
But it can do damage to one side.
Because it's going to peel off votes from somewhere.
Right.
And that's what I'm sort of curious about the Trump comments, because it seems like if he were positioning himself for an independent general election run, he'd be peeling votes off the Republican side.
And you talk about peeling off votes from a third-party candidate. Ask Al Gore about Ralph Nader.
Yeah, that's right. You don't need 33%. Let's go to Luis listening to us in Eagle, Texas, or Eagle Pass, Texas, on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Luis, good evening. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, sir.
Where is Eagle Pass, Texas?
Right in the border to Mexico.
Very good. And you're calling to share your thoughts on Donald Trump.
That is correct.
What are they?
The Mexican-American community is very, very offended by Mr. Trump's comments. Within the Mexican-American community, we have always participated in all of the wars. And in many instances in the state of Texas, the borders crossed us. We did not cross the border. Mr. Trump needs to be educated a little bit more in reference to the Mexican-Americans. In reference to that, also, I will say that we're getting more interested in this election. And I think that also he has done harm to the Republican Party. I, at one time, voted for Republicans, Reagan Republicans, and I think this has hurt within the Mexican American community that base. In addition, I would say that probably the only two Republicans that know anything having to do with the Mexican Americans is Bush, because his wife is Mexican, and also Mr. Perry, our former governor. And the reason for that is they have lived with us, we have lived with them, and we communicate better. Thank you, sir.
Luis, stay on the line. Can you stay there? Are you still there with us?
Yes, sir.
All right, I want to ask you a question. I don't know if you heard my comments earlier in the broadcast.
I have.
Based on what Governor Perry said today, will that, in your view, propel him to be viewed as a more serious candidate in this Republican primary field? Because it seems to me that he did stand up for Mexican Americans. He did stand up for you. He talked from Alamo to Afghanistan. He talked about the tremendous sacrifice that Mexican Americans have made for this country. And he painted a completely different light of Mexican Americans and Mexicans than did Donald Trump.
Yes, he did. And I think that would help him. Whether it helps him by being a Republican, I do not know, because I think that there has been enough damage done already by the Republicans, because we do hear a lot of hate statements sometimes in the Mexican American community. And this has come a lot from some, and I'm not going to say that all, within the Republican candidate.
Quick question. When Ted Cruz basically slaps Donald Trump on the back, again, being a Hispanic from Texas, how do you respond to that?
I will tell you this, sir. Ted Cruz is not a Mexican-American.
What is he?
I understand he was born in Canada, or he associates himself with much more within the Anglo community.
Okay, thanks very much for that point. Good perspective.
Thank
Back
you,
shortly
sir.
From Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be, where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches? Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back. The last caller from Mexico talked about Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz was born in Canada to an American and Cuban father. So you're right, Cuban. He's not Mexican-American. But again, he's Cuban, and obviously Marco Rubio is Cuban as well. His parents came over to the United States on one of the boat lifts back in the 50s and early 60s. Ricardo, I don't want you to go unfocused on in this conversation, because for those listening around the country, if you just tuned in, you grew up in a housing project in New York. You ended up going.
Correct. I grew up in public housing in East Harlem.
So you're
in public housing.
You're an up from the bootstraps guy, graduated from Harvard, now a businessman, very mm-hmm. successful businessman. My question to you: you are Puerto Rican. For those listening around the country,
yes.
Explain to the audience, Puerto Ricans, Mexicans, Cubans, Central Americans that live in the that are citizens of the United States, but they're from different parts of the world. A lot of political analysts put them all together in one big lump sum as the Hispanic vote, but that vote's very, very different, isn't it?
Well, it depends on the region that you're looking at. If you looked at New York City, it'd be largely a community from Puerto Rico. From Florida, it'd be Cuban. From the Southwest, it'd be Mexican. But the interesting piece about Illinois and Chicago, when I first came here, I partnered with individuals from Mexico, from Colombia, from Central America, and we formed organizations in Chicago. I was one of the founders of an organization called Hispanic Alliance for Career Enhancement. And we all worked together to bring this organization together. And in Chicago, we actually worked together. So when I first came here, we didn't have any elected individuals.
But here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a Puerto Rican, and again, we're talking about Puerto Rican. These are all Americans of different extractions for those listening around the country.
Sure.
Does the Puerto Rican American, is he excited that Marco Rubio, a Cuban American, is running? And is he more likely to vote for him because he happens to be at least a fellow Hispanic, although not a Cuban? Or frankly, and again, let's lay it right down here, do Puerto Ricans really not like Cubans? And do Cubans not really like Mexicans?
Well,
what's the mix?
What
happens if there's a big picnic?
I'll share this with you, Bruce. I always thank Nixon for creating the word Hispanic. Because up until that time in the census, all of the groups were listed as smaller groups. Thanks to President Nixon, everybody's now under 110. And that created tremendous power in the U.S. I would say, as a Hispanic and a...
It's probably one of the things that a Republican did that no Democrat ever gives him credit for it.
Right. And for me, I don't have a problem supporting a Mexican-American, supporting a Cuban-American, so supporting another individual in the Latin family. I think that's strength. I think what people don't see is the fact when that person has a serious race for an office, those other groups will come in to support that person.
Would you say that given, again, you talked about New York City, mm-hmm. I'm going to make a statement. You tell me whether it's too general. Puerto Ricans tend to be overwhelmingly Democratic. Cubans tend to be predominantly Republican. And Mexican-Americans are about maybe 60-40, 70-30 Democrat over Republican. Is that a fair statement?
It depends on age, depends on education, and it depends on how long they've been in the U.S. So to help you understand, if someone came, a really good friend of mine, grew up in the Southwest, came to Chicago, and became the president of CPS in the early 80s. He's Mexican-American. He and I were really good friends. He had a law degree from Harvard. So you're looking at class issues and education issues. Yes. So you're looking at education and class issues. I think there's more in common among Latins that are hardworking and trying to do positive things. And there's a disconnect between someone who hasn't made the attempt to learn the language and isn't as educated. That's where I see the disconnect.
Okay. Well stated. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Carl, is calling from Lubbock, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. And by the way, Luis, who was on our broadcast a couple of minutes ago, he called back. He wanted me to clarify. He is a Mexican-American. If I inadvertently just called him a Mexican, that was my mistake. He is a Mexican-American, and he was very proud of it. And now we go to Lubbock, Texas, and we hear from Carl. Go ahead, Carl. You're on the air.
Bruce, it wouldn't be Sunday without your show.
Thank you very much.
Tell
that to Chuck Todd.
Yeah. I'm the Republican Party chairman in Lubbock, but I also am president of the association that represents all the other chairmen in Texas. And it's really coincidental that Donald Trump has made his comments. I was down along the border meeting with 10 Republican Party chairmen of all the counties down there, and we had a round-robin, roundtable discussion that I got to moderate, and I had to ask a tough question. Is the Republican Party stance on immigration too tough? Is it hurting them down there? Because we've had a significant swing towards the Republican Party from those counties along the border, which are very heavily Hispanic, and they actually were very offended and quite adamant that we needed to even toughen our stance on immigration, that it was the legal Mexican Hispanics it's their jobs that are being stolen by illegal immigrants. And so they felt it's a tough talk, and I can prove it. You know, the Republican candidates for governor and lieutenant governor were very tough on the immigration issue, and they got about 43% of their Hispanic vote in Texas. And so we're, you know, I might be counterintuitive, but frankly, the tough talk on immigration has actually helped the Republican Party here in Texas.
Okay. Thanks for that perspective. And by the way, we should also mention that, you know, when Prop 187 passed in the state of California years and years ago, this was under Pete Wilson, the vast majority of Hispanics or Mexican-Americans supported it. I mean, they too, as you just said, they felt it was their jobs that were being taken by illegal immigrants coming over from Mexico. So they were part of the crackdown that led to that policy. Let me ask you a political question, since you've identified yourself as a county chairman and work with other county chairmen. Explain to us Texas politics. You have Senator Cruz, you have the former governor, two-term, longest-serving governor, and then you have former President George W. Bush. And it's been known that the Bush family isn't really wild about Rick Perry, who was his lieutenant governor. And what's the relationship? Sort that out, Texas Republican politics, for us at the moment.
You know, you're also forgetting one. Rand Paul grew up in Houston.
Yes.
So we actually considered him very much of a Texan. You know, I'm seeing that Rick Perry is kind of seen maybe as the beginning of the path of that version of the Republican Party or that version of the establishment. And Ted Cruz looks like the new version, the fresher version. And so I would argue that if it was some kind of an election between Ted Cruz and Rick Perry right now, Ted Cruz would win it hands down. Now, when you look at Jeb Bush, you know, I'm not so sure how much he's embraced here in Texas. The grassroots of the Republican Party would definitely, I would think, would lean towards Ted Cruz. But it's difficult to just look at the grassroots. As you know, anyone can vote in the Republican primary. So it's going to be interesting to see how much stronger that Bush name is here.
But the question, I just clarify, would you acknowledge that the Bush family does not like or has never been supportive of Rick Perry? There's an animosity that exists there.
You know, Bruce, I mean, you know, when George W. ran against Ann Richards, George W. Bush was in an airplane with Rick Perry every day. They were best friends. As time went on, I think there were some schisms. I'm not sure how strong they are. And both families have done a very good job of, you know, not having that too far out there into the public. So I guess in short, I really don't know.
Okay. But you would say, I think, big news, breaking news from you right now, although the Texas primary is a long way away, you would say that in a Texas primary, if it were held today between Ted Cruz and Rick Perry, Ted Cruz would sail to victory?
Ted Cruz would win hands down, probably 60-40.
Okay. Prescott's got a comment.
You know, as someone who actually has spent some time down in Texas for business reasons, not for campaigns or politics or anything like that, but as a political animal, obviously, who works in government, I get sort of a front row seat. And the caller can probably provide more detail, but Ted Cruz beat Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst in the primary. And it wasn't even close, as I recall. And then he went on to just an overwhelming victory in the election, in the general election. So Ted Cruz is not a, you know, clearly, and this is sort of the, you know, Captain Obvious here, not a flash in the pan. He was a bit, when he first burst on the scene in Texas, a bit Donald Trump-like. He said some outrageous things.
Mm-hmm.
But he ran up against a candidate in Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst who basically thought he was going to walk to victory, had all the money. He thought he was going to be the ordained candidate and be the next U.S. senator from Texas. Not so much. I'm sure the caller can provide a little more detail.
Yeah, I mean, you have to understand, Ted Cruz came out of absolutely nowhere.
Right.
He wasn't a mayor. He wasn't a state legislator. But he was bold, just like Donald Trump is being bold, and Ted Cruz is kind of backing him up.
Do you say right now though let me just kind of pin the Donald Trump thing and I need a quick answer. So the Donald Trump rhetoric is not viewed as a horrible thing in Texas now?
I think you're absolutely underestimating the disposition of the Republican Party right now. And I think the disposition of the general public, I think Donald Trump is absolutely reverberating with the people. And I think we need to watch out.
Okay, thanks very much for your call. 1-800-723-8289. Two different stories from Texas tonight. Back shortly.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a four-diamond hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Welcome back. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. We're having a great time. Hope you're enjoying listening to this broadcast. I'm going to do a quick introduction. Philip Beverly is here. He is one of our Democrats. He is from Chicago State University. Stephanie Hitt is here. Once upon a time, she worked for the U.S. Attorney's Office, Rudy Giuliani, in Manhattan. And also Ricardo Rodriguez joins us. He is a businessman in Chicago, basically from New York City, originally from New York City, a Harvard graduate. And your degree was in – what was your degree in?
I have an MBA.
MBA, okay. And also Jim Prescott joins us. He is in the public affairs business. He does a lot of media, mostly corporate, but they do some political stuff as well.
The dark arts.
And the dark arts. The ones that pay.
Yeah.
You don't have to chase them down. And he, for many years, was part of the press team for former Illinois Governor Jim Thompson. 1-800-723-8289. We're talking a lot about politics. But just in that last half hour, we had two people call from Texas. We had a Mexican-American who was talking about Donald Trump's comments and how hurtful they are to Mexican-Americans and basically saying that at least what Rick Perry said gets some credit. And then we had a county chairman call up and say that Ted Cruz would clean him up in a primary. So we've heard from two different perspectives in Texas. There are many. It's a big state, folks. But Phil, you wanted to comment on it.
Yeah, it seems that the dichotomy there is really interesting. You've got two. Andrew Hacker wrote a book in the early 90s called Separate, Hostile, and Unequal, and he talked about the two Americas in terms of the division along racial lines that has existed since at least the Civil Rights era. And I think you've got the same thing. You've got groups of people that are on opposite sides of a huge chasm and how they're experiencing essentially the same thing. And I'm not surprised that a large portion, if not most, of the Mexican-American community would be outraged by those comments, while some other elements in the white community wouldn't be outraged by it, that they would embrace those comments.
Yeah.
And I think I said earlier, Trump is speaking to an element, not the entire party, but unfortunately the brush that he's painting with is painting the whole party.
But can you end up building a constituency by being mealy-mouthed? I mean, there are a lot of Republican candidates that haven't said anything about Donald Trump, either that you patted him on the back like Ted Cruz or you denounced him basically as Rick Perry did today. And more than just a back of the hand, but a little back of the hand that scolding from Jeb Bush. I mean, Marco Rubio, Scott Walker, Huckabee. Where are they?
Where are they? They're silent.
They'd be respected on this.
I actually think that's a really important point. Is that people, when they elect people, are looking for people of principle, people who actually have opinions, who believe in something. They want someone who knows their own minds, and So I mealy mouth doesn't work. I think we saw that a little bit with Romney. He flipped and he flopped and he flipped and he flopped, and that doesn't work. So you have to be willing to come out. And you have to be willing to come out swinging and know that you're going to take some strikes.
Don't you like Scott Walker?
I do. And he was not.
Isn't he a flip flopper in this race?
He was in this race, but he was not as governor of, you know, when he ran, you know, when he was recalled, you know, in Wisconsin, he was bold. He was not mealy mouthed. Where's that Scott Walker?
In Wisconsin.
Right,
he doesn't play on the national stage. He's just not ready for the national stage.
That's sort of what I think he's Jim.
He could be this year's Rick Perry. Yeah, he may not be ready for the national stage yet. You know, yeah. Is Wisconsin a success story? Is he responsible for it? You know, we could probably debate that for the rest of the show.
What about Kasich? Do you think Kasich is that a bigger success story?
Well, I think I think the question there is: he ready for the national stage? You know, he could be sort of another Scott Walker type if he's not ready for it or not. I want to come back to the caller, though, second caller. And I thought, and maybe I misheard him, Bruce, so forgive me if I did, but I thought I heard him say something in there about, you know, it, with all the contacts he's had within the Mexican-American community in Texas, and there is a strong support for enforcing the law,
a crackdown
on illegal immigrants, because in a way that hurts that community. You know, the unfortunate incident in San Francisco just confirms in everybody's mind, and to use your phrase, paints that brush, not for Republicans, but paints that brush for the Mexican-American community, that they're all like this. They're all doing this. They're all illegal. And that's, I think, unfortunate, because clearly they're not.
Right.
The perception is the exception to the reality,
it's not a white versus Mexican-American issue. And that's not where the division is in the Mexican community itself. It's not whites who are embracing, but also Mexican Americans who are embracing that.
Would you acknowledge? I alluded to this early in the first half hour when we were talking about Donald Trump's comments juxtaposed to the murder of the 32-year-old woman by an illegal immigrant, allegedly, who was let out because the sheriff of Los Angeles or San Francisco did not want to adhere to a request by the Justice Department and ICE to keep him in because he had committed seven crimes or convicted of seven crimes or charged with seven crimes. And there were five deportation orders, and they were not able to deport this guy. And he allegedly shot and killed this 32-year-old woman. If you don't know about the story we're talking about, I'll tell you, it's going to dominate news in the next couple of weeks or more, maybe this campaign. But the question is, the media over the last several years, because big media supports reforms of immigration. They are not, let's get 11 million, 12 million, whatever the number is, 30 million. Let's get them and wrap up deporting. There's no major corporation, including media, that supports that plan. So there's not going to be mass arrests. So there's degrees of immigration reform, and the media generally wants to support immigration reform. So the vast majority of stories that you see on network news paint a sympathetic picture of people who are having difficult times. They come to the United States. They risk their lives. Some of them lose their lives, whether they're coming by mules or they're swimming across the Rio Grande. They're coming here for the betterment of America. You see a lot of those stories. Some would describe them as sob sister stories. A lot of them. You don't see, unless it happens, as we will now witness in San Francisco, with Mr. Sanchez, we're going to see the other side of the people that are coming into this country, and they are, in many cases, maybe they are murderers, maybe they are rapists, maybe they are the people that are clogging our hospital beds and hospitals in California, which is a story we've heard on this program for over 10 years. What's the story of the gangbangers on the street? Where are all the drugs coming from? What about our prisons? Are our prisons filled with a lot of Mexican Americans or Mexicans who've created crime? Where are their stories? You don't hear those stories. Now, they have to exist. But, I'm a firm believer, by the way, the vast majority of people that are coming here, in my view, are coming here for the goodness of America because they want to. Because I've been on the border. I have talked through an interpreter with people who've tried to come into this country for the good of their families.
Exactly.
Right.
That's the vast majority of the story, and that's the story the media tells.
Right.
But Donald Trump is talking about part of the story that's a negative side.
Right.
And he's touching on the nerve. And I think
But he made it the whole story. And it's not.
He made it the whole story by the way he said it. But in that comment, when he talked about the murders and rapes, he said, there's probably a few people coming here for good reasons too. He threw it as an aside.
Right. And then he
doubled down on it. But again, to put it in context, I'm just saying is whether it is whites, blacks, Hispanics, whatever it is, Jews, not 100% of those groups are perfect, wonderful people that you want
to
spend the rest of your life with.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are downsides.
Mine too.
There's... But again, I think, as you say, it's this broad brush that Donald Trump is now trying to overcome. I mean, you know, we should mention, for those around the country, we do this program when all of our guests, if we were to walk outside this museum where we do this program from every single night or every single Sunday night, we are one block from Trump Tower in Chicago. I look at it every single day. And last night as I was coming home from the 4th of July celebration in Chicago, this beautiful building, which has got Trump's name emblazoned all over one side of it, which has ticked off a lot of people. I look at that. When I was walking back looking at that building last night, I was saying to myself, I wonder how many Mexicans built that building. And I will bet hundreds.
Or work there now.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds built that building.
Mm-hmm.
And who runs his hotels? And who cleans up his hotel rooms? And who parks his cars or his limousines? Well, he probably doesn't valet park. But what I'm saying is, within that group are the group that he didn't take the time to speak of in a positive manner. He focused on the negative aspects. But again, even by speaking about some of the negative aspects, he did touch a nerve, because we have to be honest. Some of the people who are coming across the border are not good people. We don't want them here. And we know what happens. We now have a story, an example of one in San Francisco, who's going to be tried for murder. Back shortly.
Come on down to the Museum of Broadcast Communications from July 7th through 11th and join us in celebrating one of the most recognizable icons of all time, Ronald McDonald. Show up on Tuesday the 7th and meet Ronald McDonald in person. Also, we'll be giving away free Ronald McDonald socks to visitors while they last. All at the MBC, 360 North State Street in Chicago.
Ricardo, you were making a point about, we're talking about Donald Trump, and again, his ability to say things that either rile people up or touch a nerve. I like to say touch a nerve, because whether it is Patrick Buchanan, whether it is Bernie Sanders, whether it was Ross Perot, every once in a while we get a candidate who says things that, you know, it riles everybody up, gets all the media upset. They've got to defend themselves, but they're hitting a nerve and people saying, yes, 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 keep going. Well, you were making a point about the longevity, the long legs of Donald Trump in this campaign.
Well, if his goal in Iowa is to place one or two, if he places second, he can declare that a victory.
Sure.
If he goes to New Hampshire and places first or second, or third, he can declare that a victory.
Right.
And what that effectively does for all the other candidates, it dries up their sources of money.
Right.
And one has to start looking at the calendar of other primaries is New York next on that list.
Oh, Nevada, where there's a large number of Hispanics, he may not do well there. But again, he has other interests out there. And then, of course, comes South Carolina. And you're right. If you're saying things and you're in the debates, and one would assume that with every debate you're in, you're going to probably get a larger following. Sometimes you can lose votes, but you're getting a larger following. You're getting more support. He has his own personal wealth. People will start giving him money as well. And the question is, if you're a Rick Santorum, if you're a Mike Huckabee, if you're a John Kasich, if he gets in, or if you're a Scott Walker, you basically run out of money. Now, Marco Rubio apparently has a lot of money, but you know what? You have to have a message and money. Right now, Trump has a message and money. That's a dynamic thing. I mean, you know, Jeb Bush has money, but not a message. Ted Cruz has got he's got money and a message as well.
And you know, you were talking about the press and their coverage of this. It's unfortunate that the demonizing of the actual undocumented workers and illegal immigrants.
The San Francisco murder we're talking about,
right? And as much as Obama gets criticized about a lot of things, the media has been mum on his deportation record in since he became president. He's deported twice as many people as President Bush did in his 8 years in office.
And apprehended people at the border.
Absolutely. And that it's incongruous to me that the federal government has set up this deportation system. They have this guy ready to be deported, and it's some local official who lets it go. I just sort of shrug my shoulders, because if the federal government steps in and usurps their authority and says, we're showing up and we're taking this guy and we're deporting him, then it looks like it's overstepping.
In this case, there were five deportation orders. So you're right. ICE and the Justice Department was attempting to do the same thing, but why does it take five deportation orders to get someone deported?
States' rights. 10th Amendment.
And we have sanctuary cities throughout this country where the sanctuary is provided, whether you're there, you know, violating work permit laws, or you're a murderer. And there's no differentiation.
Then there is a way, because what the sheriff of San Francisco, the policy of that department is not to cooperate with ISIS or ICE, rather. ICE,
right.
ICE.
Or ISIS.
You can't – if the reason for deporting someone is purely based on the fact that they are a legal immigrant, they will not cooperate. Now, in this particular case, this guy had a long rap record, so we should look into the actions. But you're right. The Justice Department and ICE was trying to deport this guy, but why was he not deported – the first time or the second time?
Bruce, here's what happened. He was turned over by ICE to San Francisco authorities.
Sheriff, right.
Based on a 2009 arrest warrant. That case was thrown out. And once that case was thrown out, he was free to leave the jail at the county level. And since they didn't have an order officially from ICE to take him, they said, well, he's fine. He's free to go.
This is going to get into the public is going to say this and say this is bureaucracy gone amok. They're going to look for a bad guy. They're going to look for a culprit. They're going to see a dead 32-year-old woman shot at age 32. They're going to see an illegal immigrant, 45 years old, who has this long police record, who was let go by the collective governments of whether it is California or the state.
Bruce,
and the way they're going to respond is that they're going to look for an easy answer, and Donald Trump is out there speaking
absolutely
and giving them an easy answer.
Well, this individual had seven felony convictions.
Yeah,
these were not, and some of them were drug related. So one has to look at the initial concept of sanctuary cities, which were intended to keep families together.
Right.
And how does this guy fit into that
And the problem is that it's going to bring when you're talking about immigration laws, there are going to be people pushing for more lenient immigration laws so that we don't hurt those families. But what happens is you leave a hole in the net for these kind of things.
A legitimate issue that I think will evolve, perhaps as a presidential campaign issue, and maybe as a congressional campaign issue. Mm-hmm. And that is going to be the power of the purse, whether or not the United States Congress, in the wake of all of this high visibility, highly emotional situation, and again, I think you're going to hear a lot about the term sanctuary city, and whether or not the Congress of the United States has the power to cut off funding, federal funding, to any city that is viewed as a sanctuary city. That is dealing with it, where every mayor in every big city that is the mayor of a sanctuary city, that's where you can get them. Clip, clip, clip. You cut off their power. You cut off their money. Let's find out whether Congress seizes this moment and goes that far. That's where I think this issue is going. And right at the moment, there's a candidate who's speaking about it. And again, he's shaking things up. I'm Bruce Dumont. We're out of time for this evening. Phil Beverly, thanks very much. Ricardo Rodriguez, thank you very much. Stephanie Hitt, Jim Prescott. This program is a Genevieve production produced in association with 1590 AM WCGO. I'm Bruce Dumont. See you next week.